So these five faculties that we've been cultivating are, they're kind of natural functions in the mind that support us in many different ways besides meditation practice. And Gil mentioned this yesterday, you know, he said he hoped that we were engaging the five faculties while driving a car. And, you know, they are actually, you know, we can look at these five faculties, faith or confidence, energy, vitality, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom or understanding, as being functions that work together to enable us to do things, to learn things, to engage in things, to cultivate skills. And the what we're aiming them at will be very different at different times. You know, we could potentially aim the cultivation of these faculties towards the skill of learning how to play basketball, for instance. Learning the rules of the game at the beginning is a kind of a wisdom that we learn what the rules of the game are, and then have some confidence that we can begin, you know, a little bit of confidence or a sense of the willingness to start to do it, being the faith faculty or the confidence faculty. And as we engage, as we start to do it, some energy grows, some energy, and the direction of the energy is kind of aimed at cultivating the skill of that particular experience, that particular thing, the playing of basketball. And we need to use mindfulness, a kind of awareness of our body, in terms of how we engage in the activity of doing this and what the effect is. And then as we practice that, there gets to be a little bit more skill in terms of, you know, maybe the concentration might be where the game becomes a little more of a flow. There's a little bit more it's not so much that you have to work to remember the rule and remember how to dribble and remember how to shoot. It just becomes more how you are. And then the system kind of begins to engage and respond much more quickly to various events in the game. I saw some videos of Steph Curry just watching how his body just responded. There's one video in particular where he's at the line, the three-point line, and getting ready to shoot. He's all set to shoot, and this guy comes at him flying through the air, and Steph Curry just steps to the side and shoots, and the guy goes flying past him. So it's kind of like just seeing these conditions, you know, oh, not going to be able to shoot here, shift and shoot, without really thinking, you know, in a conscious way, this is what I have to do. It looked like just a flow. And so that's, you know, the mindfulness and the concentration and the wisdom kind of all working together at a level almost below the surface of our conscious doing. And these faculties, I think, in our meditation, it's a similar kind of thing. What these faculties do is support the skill of meditation. And they function kind of in a similar way, in that we first need to learn, like, how to pay attention, what it means to actually meet experience. What does it mean to actually notice experience as experience in the present moment? So we learn about the kind of guidelines that the teachings are pointing us towards, how to pay attention, how to attend to experience, and what is that going to accomplish for us? The wisdom, the understanding of letting go. So these faculties, directed by the wisdom of the Buddhist teachings, begin to cultivate this skill or art of meditation, of looking at our experience, meeting our experience. So these faculties work to support the abandoning of the reactive states of mind, the defilements, those states based in greed, aversion, and delusion. These faculties work together to support a stabilization of mind, to be able to meet whatever is happening moment to moment without being pulled out into reactivity. Just this, just this, just this. And these faculties work together to support the direct understanding, the seeing of the wisdom that the Buddha is pointing to, that the teachings point to, that free the mind. The seeing directly into the impermanent, unreliable, not-self nature of experience. And at a certain point, these faculties are so strong and working together that we're not having to try to do the practice anymore. It feels like the wisdom and the mindfulness and the concentration are all acting in concert to respond and to meet and to understand and to release suffering. And yet in our practice of meditation, perhaps a little less like the cultivation of a skill like basketball or playing the piano or something where, you can almost, I'm sure that like Steph Curry, when he stops playing basketball for a week, he probably notices it when he goes back, the difference. But from the outside, it probably still looks like he's pretty in there. But in the inside of our meditation, there's a wide fluctuation in terms of how these faculties are working and the feeling of the experience. The feeling of how much work it takes to practice, of when it feels like there's a flow and it's easy and just able to meet experience. So at different times in meditation, experience, the skill of meditation maybe feels more smooth or more bumpy. And even different different kinds of experiences we may, the way we are experiencing what's happening in the moment can be a reflection of how these faculties are functioning. Each of these faculties we've talked about kind of having a range, and for instance, faith might feel, and I really want to point to the feeling level of these, not an intellectual kind of thing, but how the experience feels at as these faculties function and interweave in different ways. So there may be times when faith is at the kind of point of a willingness to engage, but not much of a sense of deeply understanding the value of the engagement. It's like faith can be in a range. Sometimes it can just be, I don't even know, how this works, but I'm willing to see. And so that allows there to be some engagement. Or there can be the sense or the understanding, the direct kind of having had some direct experience of wisdom, of seeing how the value of the practice is experienced directly in the moment, that can create what we call the verified faith. And that verified faith can be a very strong motivator for energy and engagement. The energy itself, there's a range of making the effort kind of consciously with an act of agency, of will, to the experience of it just feeling like the practice is carrying us. And some of that feeling of the practice carrying us has had to do with the momentum, perhaps, of the energy that's cultivated with making that light touch of effort over and over again. Or that energy actually might be connected to a strong understanding of wisdom. The strong understanding of the value, or a strong curiosity of what's here. It doesn't feel like so much we're doing the effort as it feels like, you know, the effort is carried along by something else, perhaps by that sense of confidence or by that sense of understanding. And then mindfulness too. There's so many different ways that mindfulness meets experience. Different objects that arise in experience. Different ways that attention works, either precise, focused, or broad. And so quite often, you know, I mentioned this briefly in the reflection last night. Some of you might not have been here for that, but Gil talked about the clarity of mindfulness being like a window is clean. But through that clean window, you might see a very clear, vast landscape, you know, very different landscapes you might see through that window, and different feelings that arise based on the different landscapes. It might just be that you're looking out into a blue sky, not much there, just that blueness. Or it might be that you're looking out over a city that's really busy and flowing and lots of activity. Or it might be looking out over the ocean of gentle lapping waves. Or it might be looking out into fog. Not much clarity at all of what is in the fog, but knowing there's fog, the objects, the experiences that we have with mindfulness, what's happening there, whether it feels dynamic, engaged, or smooth and tranquil, whether the objects feel like they're popping and jumping and rapidly changing or just stable, whether it feels like there's clarity of seeing this and then this and then this, or just having a sense of fog. The objects that we're aware of are different than the awareness. And so the experience of meditation can feel quite vastly different depending on what objects are happening. And we often seem to prefer certain objects over others, but they're all just objects. They're all just experiences. And mindfulness can know any of them. So this experience of how the meditation feels can be vastly different depending on what kinds of experiences the attention and the mindfulness are connecting to. That's another major reason for different experiences in meditation. And another, you know, the other faculty of concentration, how we have engaged in cultivating that stability of mind influences how the concentration feels, whether it feels very stable, whether the objects become stable, very little change, moving more and more to stillness, or whether there's more dynamic, the moment-to-moment concentration, a lot more of seeing change, seeing a lot of different activity. And then wisdom, again, a range kind of around wisdom, from having heard some information, taking that in, and being willing to engage with it, but not much having the direct understanding. Just hearing, you know, just that early teaching I heard, it's useful to notice your anger instead of following it. You know, just that teaching was, you know, it took me a long way. I took it in first with just hearing it, not understanding it, but willing to engage, began to explore it with a little bit of reflection, began to understand intellectually the value of it, and then began to see much more clearly, directly in the moment, why it was useful. What happened in the experience as I explored it? So these faculties interweave, and the way that each one is functioning will shape how the experience is, shape what we are experiencing in the moment. There's no one way that meditation feels when it is onward leading. There's so many different ways that our minds process and engage with these faculties to learn and understand about how suffering arises and what it means to let go. Wisdom seems to be a pretty powerful shaper of how these faculties work together. When we're working with the wisdom that we've taken in, sometimes call it borrowed wisdom, wisdom that we've read or a teacher has pointed to, where we don't have the direct experience, but we're kind of willing to engage with it. When we're working with borrowed wisdom, often the practice feels like it takes some work, because we need to bring the energy to be curious about experience, to notice what's happening. And so there's the active engagement of effort, cultivating that recognition of awareness when we're aware, when we're not aware, how it is to be aware. So it feels like it takes work when we're at the beginning there in that place of borrowed wisdom. And then wisdom and mindfulness can strengthen and work together, which will generate more faith, more confidence, and more energy, which will kind of begin to carry us with a little more ease, a little bit more of a sense of, I think, partly because faith that gets stronger, and there's more of the feeling of the value of practice. There's more of the understanding of not just an intellectual, if I do this, maybe this will support me. There's the knowing that it has supported you. And so there's much more willingness, much more movement towards that engagement. And so wisdom's a little stronger because it's had little tastes, perhaps, of why it's valuable to practice. And then at a certain point, and this is not like linear, unfortunately. these faculties, at sometimes wisdom is strong, sometimes it's gotten submerged back into our old habits and patterns are stronger than our wisdom. And so we have to go back to the work. But sometimes at certain points, we can feel the strength of wisdom. And it feels at this point like it takes no effort to practice. The effort, the faith, the mindfulness, and the concentration are all carried by wisdom. By the understanding, a deeper sense of the understanding of not only the value of practice, but the direct seeing in the moment. This is impermanent. It feels like the interest gets very strong at times. There's no need to do the interest, just carried by that wisdom. So the strength of these five faculties does fluctuate throughout a day, throughout a retreat, even throughout a sitting, it can fluctuate. There can be times where we have a sense of it feeling like, oh, I've arrived. I don't have to work anymore. And, we can get kind of attached to that and then resist when things shift. The strength of wisdom can get, but habits and patterns will re-arise and kind of begin to swamp the understanding at times. And so we have to go back to engaging. So we need to have the discernment, that form of wisdom. Gil was talking about discernment as another word for wisdom. To have the discernment to recognize when we actually need to bring in the effort again, when we need to call on some sense of agency to engage and not resist that willingness to make the effort when it's needed. That can be a little, especially early on in the first few years of practice, when I experienced those moments. Sometimes even days of just, wow, it's so easy. I figured this out, and then when it shifts, it's like I feel betrayed or something by my mind. It's like, come on, you know this, and I have to work again, really? Oh, and there's such a resistance sometimes to going back to that. But there's a shift in our practice at some point where it just is like, oh yeah, okay, it's like this right now. There needs to be a little more engagement, or a lot more engagement. Because we discern that we're not at that place where wisdom is strong. If the wisdom is not carrying us, in fact, defilements may be carrying us. Greed may be carrying us. And so we need to bring in those tools of, need to see that greed arising. What does it feel like? Turn to the experience. And we need to shift our energy towards a little bit more doing. And that discernment of what's needed right now. So these five faculties working together, as they do, strengthen and at times come together to support a seeing of our experience in a new way, to support seeing from the Dharma perspective, support understanding experience as impermanent, as unsatisfactory, as a place to land, to hold on to, largely because it's impermanent, it is not a reliable place to land and find lasting happiness. And then the not-self nature of experience. The mind starts to understand experience is not worth clinging to and begins to let go. So these faculties support this understanding of wisdom. Gil talked about wisdom yesterday, and there's so much to say about wisdom that I'm going to talk some more about it today. I'm going to talk about it from an experiential exploration. Because as Gil said, you know, wisdom sounds like it's a thing. It's like, something that we kind of have sitting over our shoulder or something. The word, it sounds like a noun, right? Wisdom is kind of, it's a noun. But and discernment does have much more of a sense of activity. And yet discernment also sounds a little bit like we do that. So there's something in between these two. It's like wisdoming. I don't know of a good word for this. Where the we begin to see and experience that wisdom functions. We begin to recognize what happens, what's the effect when wisdom is present. What happens in our minds when wisdom is present? What's the functioning of wisdom? How does it do what it does? And again, not something that we do. It arises, and I'm going to step back for a second. One of my teachers, Sayadaw Utejaniya, talks about mental activities having functions, and wisdom has a function. Just like, in a way, we could say greed has a function. You know, the function of greed is to hang on to things. And it believes that hanging on to something is going to make me happy. That's kind of how it works. He encourages us to get to know the job descriptions of what's going on in our minds. And so he encouraged, you know, get to know the job description of wisdom. Well, how does wisdom work? Where does it show up? And so this was an exploration I made on retreat. It's like, well, how does wisdom work? How do I recognize it? First, he said, get to know wisdom at work. I'm like, okay, I don't even know what that means. And at first I started like, you know, when I noticed some kind of a shift, I noticed that things were a little easier. I kind of just said, well, wisdom must be working here. That's how I started. And then I kind of began to have a little more clarity about how wisdom does work and the kinds of ways that it shows up. So I'd like to just name some of these things I've experienced. This is definitely not comprehensive. So just a sampling of ways you might experience wisdom and probably even have experienced wisdom. wisdom functioning in your mind without you doing it. That's one of the kind of hallmarks of wisdom. It is not self. It arises and does its thing. We could say the job description of wisdom is to recognize dukkha and to release it. One of the job descriptions of wisdom, to recognize dukkha and to release the mind from dukkha. That's a function of it. One of the ways many of us experience wisdom working, and you may have experienced quite a few of these, but not actually consciously recognized it. Oh, that's wisdom working. It's possible that you took credit for this. Oh, I did that. I made that shift happen. Or it's possible you just, you know, you just kind of experienced some relief that something shifted and didn't really take in, oh yeah, that was wisdom. One of the things I want to point to here too in this exploration is that, as with other wholesome qualities, we talked the other day about recognizing, what is it like for mindfulness to be present? What is the experience of mindfulness? And that recognition itself strengthens that wholesome state. When we bring mindfulness to wholesome states, wholesome functions of mind, it strengthens them. And so when we recognize the wholesome quality of wisdom at work, it has the effect of strengthening it. And so this is a kind of an encouragement. What Sayadaw gave me the instruction, get to know wisdom at work. He was encouraging me to recognize and explore this faculty of wisdom. So one of the ways that many of us, one of the kind of early ways or familiar ways we may experience wisdom at work is when we're experiencing some kind of a challenge. And I'll also say that a lot of the ways we experience wisdom at work is in connection with dukkha, in connection with suffering. Not the only ways, but a lot of the ways we experience wisdom functioning is when we are exploring dukkha. And so we may be noticing a particularly challenging state of body or mind and noticing some reactivity to it. And there's at some point the willingness to be there, and there's a little bit of a shift in the mind, a feeling of, it's not that the challenge goes away, but there's a little bit of space. Oh, this is just greed arising. That's what's happening. And there's a sense of some space around it that you can know that greed without thinking the greed is a problem. So the letting go of the problematizing of some of our challenging states of mind, that shift of, oh, this is what's happening. This to me is kind of like that experience of when we have a reactivity. I talked about the gears, you know. When we're really involved in the reactivity, the gears are engaged. And this shift is like the feeling of disengaging the gears. The mind has a kind of more neutral quality. The pattern still continues, the momentum of the pattern still continues, but we can watch it kind of dissipate, the energy of that pattern dissipate, because there's that sense of neutral. This shift is some wisdom that understands this is just an experience arising in the present moment. That's what's happening. There's some wisdom arising there. And that experience, another way we might notice wisdom, is to actually clearly recognize something in the present moment arising as something arising in the present moment. That sounds like a tautology. But the experience of that has a quite distinct kind of flavor, where we notice, for instance, the difference between a thought arising around something that happened 2 days ago, and we understand that is just an experience, the thought is arising now, versus being in the thought and almost believing that we're in 2 days ago. There's a big difference there. The understanding, this thought of the past is simply a thought arising in the present moment. This thought of the future is simply something happening right now. We don't have to stop them. It's just another phenomenon arising in the present moment. Just something happening right now. We can also see at times, right in the present moment, a process perhaps unfolding of how maybe a memory, so seeing this memory arise in the present moment, and seeing what that conditions in the present moment, the thought of a memory arising in the present moment, conditioning the feelings, like remember something happened 2 days ago, an argument with a friend. That memory just arises in the present moment, which may have arisen, you may have seen this too. I've seen, just doing something physical, doing something in the kitchen, cutting an apple, that triggers a memory of something that happened in the past with someone, and then there's an emotional response to that memory. But the mind, when wisdom is functioning, you can see this is conditioned. This has arisen, and this has arisen, and this has arisen, and this emotion that's arising, I'm not doing that. It's just arising because of conditions. And again, this is wisdom seeing that this is just an unfolding pattern, not something I'm doing. This, in a way, this is an understanding of the wisdom understanding or pointing to the not-self nature of experience. Seeing that condition, that condition, that arose, and then that arose. So wisdom can see that. Sometimes wisdom can function in a different way entirely. You know, that kind of wisdom of seeing things really clearly, it's quite cool, actually, to be able to see into. It's like watching dominoes fall. That happened, and that happened, and that happened. It's just like, I'm not doing any of this. It's just what the mind is doing. And we can see that directly in the moment and understand this is wisdom happening directly in the moment. But there are other ways that wisdom works that's way more almost underground. Not so much available perhaps to be seen moment to moment or even know that it's kind of working. But wisdom can grow. And I think this happens because we have the aim and the orientation to committing to the practice. This wisdom can grow kind of almost in the background. So an example of how I noticed this. I talked at one point about working with anger, and I think I talked about the kind of setting it aside, seeing it come up and seeing it was more powerful than my mindfulness could handle in the moment, that if I did turn with mindfulness to it, it would take me down the rabbit hole of it. So I spent a lot of time over one stretch of months just meeting the anger in that way. I would notice it come, and I would kind of bow to it and say, yep, not now. I'm going to put my attention on something else. You can take a walk with me, but, you know, I'm not going to look at you directly. And what I noticed over the course of months of doing this, and this was a pretty, you know, there was an engagement with this as a practice. I wanted to understand the anger. I wanted to understand what was going on, but saw that the direct looking at it wasn't so helpful. Now, the disengagement from it was not an aversive disengagement. So that was a skillful, that there was some wisdom there. You know, that was a wise approach to that. And the attention to something that allowed the mind to kind of stabilize, there was wisdom there, supporting the mind to stay balanced with meeting that. And what I noticed over a long arc of months was that when I first began exploring this, this was a particular anger at a particular person around a particular event that would arise. And, you know, thought of this person came in and I would just be back in that anger. And so I, you know, exploring it in this way, I began to notice that at first, you know, it happened pretty regularly, pretty much every time I took a walk, you know, I'd be like, okay, we're taking a walk right now. And then it began, I don't know when I began noticing it, but it began to get kind of less frequent. It just didn't happen as frequently, you know, maybe every few days and at some point every few weeks, I would notice that anger, notice those thoughts and notice that anger. And then one day, this one was very distinct. This recognition was very distinct. I remember where I was. I remember how, you know, kind of how things felt. It's like one of those seared into memory kind of moments. And it was basically in that moment noticing the absence of that pattern. And what arose in the mind was, wow, I haven't experienced that in a very long time. And even that thought, because when I thought of that, the person came into my mind. And even with that person coming into my mind, I could not generate the anger. It was gone. The anger disappeared while I wasn't looking. It just slowly, slowly fell apart. Slowly fell apart. And wisdom participated in that. And in that moment, the wisdom was recognizing it's gone. It's gone. That anger, it was gone. It never came back. It's been 20 years now. It never came back. So there are times, I mean, I think I had the idea before that experience. I had the idea that for there to be insight and understanding and for something to fall apart, that I had to be right on top of it. It had to be one of those, like, I'm seeing every single thing unfolding. And I've seen things like that. I've seen that kind of wisdom that can see in the moment the arising of an experience and understanding. It's just an arising in this moment. There's nothing here. It's just a thought and the mind believing it. Wisdom seeing that directly in the moment and how powerful that can be to support a falling apart of a deeply conditioned pattern. But this experience showed me the value and the power also of just the long arc of practice and how wisdom can develop and grow over time while we're not looking, not even really aware of it in a way. I'm going to have to skip some of these and not talk about some of these. Well, I do want to talk about another one, though, that's kind of another different flavor of wisdom. And that's related to recognizing when suffering is not happening, the non-arising of suffering, when the mind doesn't pick up the suffering. And sometimes we might notice this. Sometimes we just don't notice this. It's like we're going, it's harder to notice when something is not happening. But there can be times we might begin to recognize, and this comes up quite a bit, when we begin to see things that maybe more habitually or familiarly had created reactivity in the past, but aren't creating it right now. You know, so somebody, the way they chew in the dining hall or something, you know, the first few days of retreat might create an irritation or an annoyance, and then the retreat goes on, and you might begin to notice, yeah, it's just noise, it's just sound. It's just sound, and there's not the irritation not even arising. And sometimes we might not notice that absence of the arising of the reactivity. But again, that can be wisdom working there. That there's just, the mind has understood in a way, having seen the reactivity as suffering, because this is a lot of how wisdom develops. We meet dukkha, we meet the experience of suffering. Our system begins to understand, yep, that hurts. And our system begins to, wisdom actually begins to help our mind to not do that. So it begins to not pick up the suffering because it understands that way, you know, picking up that aversion is just going to be painful. And we can have the feeling of kind of consciously not going there at times, but there can also be the sense or the feeling of just watching. And it's kind of the sense of, yeah, it just doesn't even want to pick it up. That's wisdom that doesn't want to pick it up. We can also recognize at times the kind of the clarity of the mind when it is not reactive, beginning to taste the quality of that stability of mind that has some equanimity, that has some stability, just that balance of mind. We begin to get familiar with that. And that also, wisdom informing that equanimity. We recognize the mind is free from reactivity. So essentially, these experiences with wisdom relate to the understandings around experience being impermanent, rapidly changing, being dukkha, being unreliable, being suffering if it's picked up and clung to, and being conditioned, not self, just processes unfolding. these direct experiences are wisdom at work. There's a distinction, and this is important to understand. We can know that experience is impermanent at an intellectual level, even at a deeply reflective level. We can remember, yep, this is going to pass. But there's a difference between that kind of intellectual recognition, understanding of impermanence, and the deeper knowing of it. The deeper knowing of it more has the sense of feeling the truth of it. And when wisdom is strong, deeply connecting to those truths, there's a natural release of clinging. Craving and clinging are kind of the mind's usual approach to finding happiness in the world. But as these faculties work together to support our seeing, understanding deeply that experience is impermanent, wisdom understands the fruitlessness of holding on. It just doesn't make any sense to hold on when we see the impermanent nature of experience. When the mind deeply understands the unreliable nature of experience, the suffering nature of experience, it recognizes the painfulness of holding on, and that it doesn't make any sense to hold on because, yeah, it would create pain to do that. And when there's a deep recognition of the not-self nature of experience, the conditioned nature of experience, that there is just process internally in our system and things changing externally, processes conditioned nature internally and externally, the mind recognizes there actually isn't anything to hold on to. Wisdom lets go. Now I talked earlier about how these faculties sometimes are, you know, sometimes there's a strength of wisdom and it feels like the practice is kind of going on its own, and sometimes it feels like we need to make more effort. Well, around insight and understanding, we can also see that when we have insight, an understanding about something, that too is often impermanent. Conditions arise at times for clear seeing to happen, and it seems so obvious. How can I not see this? How can I not know that clinging creates suffering? It's just so obvious. I remember one retreat where I felt like wisdom was whispering in my ear, you know, just like for a stretch of a day or something. It's like, don't cling. That doesn't make any sense. And I was so happy. Just so happy. Like, I thought I had I thought that understanding was going to be permanent, but you know, conditions change. And a couple days later, it's like, and it seemed so obvious. I mean, how could I not know that clinging causes suffering? It's just like, it was just so clear. And then, you know, anger came back, frustration came back, trying hard to get it back came back. And I could see, you know, actually, it's not that obvious. This wisdom that shows up, it seems so obvious, but it's not. It's not actually that obvious. It's pretty hard to see. And it's a gift when we do get to taste that wisdom. And the value, too, is, you know, when that wisdom has been seen, there's a way that it is there in some way. And it's not necessarily actively there, ready to be functioning in the mind in this moment. But there's a kind of a recognition of, yep, I know that the mind is caught right now. The mind is caught by an old habit and pattern. And there needs to be some engagement to meet the experience. But partly because that clear seeing has happened, there's so much faith. So much faith that then motivates that seeing. The willingness to keep going. And there's a way, too, that I think the seeing of a habit or a pattern come back after it has just seemed like it was gone. You know, sometimes they do disappear, like that one that I mentioned, you know, wow, 20 years later, it's still gone. I suppose it might come back at some point, but I've got a pretty confident it's not at this point. But they can return. And yet there is the kind of the sense, the understanding that it doesn't have to be this way. And not in a beating ourselves up way, but in the way of, yeah, the mind is caught. The mind is caught by this pattern and habit. And it knows, our mind also knows the possibility that it doesn't have to be caught. And one of the beauties of that kind of space, of having seen something clearly, understood from the inside, the non-suffering possibility, that when the suffering comes back, we deeply understand, you know, we know that this is just the pattern at work. We know that it's just the mind obscured by delusion. It's a way that we actually can begin to recognize delusion at work. When delusion's at work and we're not recognizing it, wisdom is pretty far away. But when we see, yep, the mind is confused right now, because there's the understanding of that comparison of knowing the possibility of freedom. The mind is confused right now. It's just confused. It's just an arising. Those same wisdoms around recognizing this is just an arising now. That can, the faculties can support the meeting of that. And so there is an ebb and flow in our practice. And yet, I think I'll end with this, I just remembered this instruction. I think it was Bhikkhu Bodhi offered this. He said, there's two key instructions. Begin and continue. Just keep going. Just keep going. So thank you for listening to the Dharma.